Thank you, Bill.
Hey, everybody. How are you? Welcome to another edition of the Bill.
Bert.
Podcast. Today, we have with us, oh, Jesus, judging already with that fucking face.
Well, the way you alternated.
One of the biggest celebrities. This guy is bigger than the Hollywood sign. He's just, he is a monster. Both good and bad in this business. Please welcome Mr. Bob Saget, everybody.
Thank you. Please hold your applause till the end.
Are those all your awards in the background?
No, it's a bunch of shit. There's a Rodney Dangerfield statue right there. I got an award for that. And then I got inducted into the TV Hall of Fame right there. Because like for the a video show for people getting hit in the nuts.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Can I tell you that show, I'm being dead serious. When I first went, my first time hanging out with my wife on a Sunday at her house, when we first started dating, she put on America's Funniest Home Videos. Now as a comic, I was like, I'm not going to watch this. I don't need to see this. I got a high level of sense of humor. She's like, no, this is the greatest show you've ever watched. And I went, America's Funniest Home Videos. And Bob, I saw one with this black dude. It was a white guy dressed as a scarecrow with the Halloween candy in his lap. And like a cheerleader comes up and then the guy goes, woo! And the cheerleader goes, aah! And this black dude comes up. I used to watch this every day. It made me laugh. Black dude comes up. He's got sweatpants on. He's talking about some construction work he's got lined up. Reaches in, and the white guy, just a scarecrow, goes, aah! And the black guy goes, wham! And knocks him unconscious. Yeah, fucking dying laughing.
Did it win? It should have won the 10 grand.
The good ones never won. It was always the shitty one of the baby in the fucking stroller.
Yeah, you know why? Because they didn't let the ones win that were international. So they would buy those and they would do like a trade, like trading cards. They would trade videos. So they wouldn't fly somebody from Sweden because that's too expensive. So they only did domestic or sometimes Canada clips.
That show was really groundbreaking as far as that was sort of like YouTube before YouTube. Like all those videos, Fail Army and, Epic Fail, whatever the hell they call it. Like that was, it sort of took from your show.
Yeah. And everything online. I mean, everything I look at, half the people's things they put on Instagram is all nut hits and just people, pants falling down and they have to scramble the signal of their dick, Which that's how I see penises anyway. When I would go into a locker room, everybody's dick is scrambled. That's how straight I am. Or want to be so bad. I want to be straight.
Bob. Bob, being gay now, you can get a show. You can get your own bathroom or something. There's a lot of movement in that direction.
Yeah.
It's funny that you finally came out and now you're crawling back in.
Well, I did Fuller House. If that's not doubling down on that.
How crazy is it though that one of the cool things about you when I first came out to LA was like you were the Full House dad, and then you would get on stage and talk about cunt this and cunt that.
No, I didn't say cunt a lot. Only about exes. No, I didn't do that. No, I really didn't say it.
But you would curse a lot, and everyone.
I did curse.
If that was today, meaning if you were on Full House now and that was the hit kind of family show and you went on stage and talked course, you get canceled in a fucking second.
Look at like Jeff Garlin. He's on like the number one family show, the Goldbergs. So then you got two double whammies. It's a Jewish family and and it's a hit show, and he gets on stage and says whatever he wants, and
yeah, I guess.
But it's not like I was blatantly doing dick joke after dick joke. Bill knows. And it was just imagery for me. It was like hitting a body.
Yeah, I've used Bob Saget's at as a template for my entire career as far as writing closing bits and stuff like that. You got to go dick joke, Bob's the only guy I've ever seen to be able to sustain it, though. A lot of people, once they get into the dick joke thing, it's got to be towards the end of their act or else there's nowhere to go. But not with Bob, just endlessly exploring every fold.
It's a through line.
Crotch area.
Every vein, every avenue, every vesicle. Well,
that's not true. He's also an incredible musician, plays the guitar great. He sings a little bit. He's got all kinds of awards. He takes compliments well. He does benefits for people. As much as he tries to be edgy, there's a big old softy in there.
Well, he overpaid the fuck out of me one time. We did a college together, Bob. Do you remember this?
I know we did. Where was it?
It was in New York, and You paid me $5,000 to open for you. And I remember getting the check in the, like, you got on stage. I go back, there's an envelope. I get the check and I'm like, holy shit. This is how young I was. I thought I got your check. So I was like, I went up to you and I was like, I think they gave me your check. And you looked at it and you went, mine's a lot bigger, buddy.
No, but you were really funny. And I only see you on tape and stuff. And then they said, how's this? And I went, oh no, he's great. And but it is a mistake. It was supposed to be 500. I took a loss, but
you just didn't want to go through this social awkwardness.
Right. And I knew it would come out eventually in a situation like this when podcasts were king.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know something? You overpaid him by $4,500, and I'm sure he told 20,000 people. So that money came right back to you.
I've told everyone how you overpaid me. I remember it was like the biggest. That was like $5,000 when I just had Georgia. That was a game changer. That was like, okay, rent's taken care of for 3 months. I mean, that's two things. If you give me a good intro, bringing me on stage, I never forget it. And no, if you same. Paid me, if you paid me well, I'll never forget. People that paid well, you, that shit spreads like wildfire with other comics. Like,
that makes me very happy that I did that, because I would never do that today. Because there's no way. I mean, I have to ask you, Bert, this drive-in thing. Is it on hold or are you doing it?
Let's go. I think everything's sold out.
So it's June, July. That's your summer. You're going to be doing drive-ins.
June and July, I'm doing drive-in movie theaters. It's stand-up at drive-in movie theaters. I think I got to travel with the stage so that we bring the stage with us. Shows start at 8. And yeah, it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be one of those things where you look at it and you go, well, I'm never going to do this again. And now's when it's safe and it's a way to do stand-up. So I'm kind of excited. I like trying the frontieredness of it is what I like, you know?
Yeah. Well, you look like you're Grizzly Adams right now. I mean, you're there. And I have a question, and I'm sure you probably talk about it in your stand-up, but do you shower in full clothing? do you sleep fully clothed? And only when you're working, everything comes off?
Yeah. I have sex with my shirt on. I put it on just because I want to razzle-dazzle it.
Yeah, right. Keep them guessing.
No. Are there enough drive-ins out there? That's kind of on my bucket list to go see. I wanted to take my wife. There's like one or two left in the LA area, and I always wanted to take my wife.
No, there's only one now. After last night, there's only one.
Oh, no.
No, they're popping up. They're all over the place. And as soon as I announced it, they started hitting me up everywhere. And so we may add some shows. Because it's I remember seeing Coal Miner's Daughter.
Are you doing two shows?
Doing two shows. Late show starts kind of late. You got to do it when the sun sets. The sun's got to be down to start the show. And it should be interesting, you know? I hope they're fun shows.
Are they going to put you up on the screen?
Yeah, I go up on the big screen and I'm on in front of the screen. So it'll
be.
You
have three cameras or something? You got people shooting it.
Three cameras. So it's like watching a special. And then all the audio goes right through their FM players on their into their cars.
I love this. This is to me. I love shit like that.
Love shit like that too. Like I used to do a show called the Calling Sick to Work. Calling Sick to Work. So I go and do radio from 8 till 10, drink on air, and then I go right to the comedy club and tell everyone on radio, calling sick to work. Don't go to work. And I come to the club. They'd open up the club at like 11, and we do a show at noon. And that was the funnest fucking shows I would ever do because everyone's day drinking. That's like the favorite.
I was gonna say, how hammered did people get?
Bill, people got so fucked up. The last one I did was in Tampa. I gave Segura's number out on stage, and they were chanting the machine, and I go, I'm not doing it, and I walked off. I don't remember getting paid. I don't remember getting home. All I know is I wake up in a house, right? I've never been in my entire life. I wake up in this house, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, whose fucking house am I in? I go out, and no one's in the house. It's a really nice house. No one's in the house. And I'm sitting here going, I don't have my cell phone. I don't know where my cell phone is, but I don't know where my wallet is. And I'm looking at this house, and all of a sudden, I see a picture of my sister in this house. I go, that's a picture of my sister when she was a kid. I look around. All of a sudden, door opens. My dad walks in. My parents have bought a new house.
That's fantastic.
Oh, been there yet. And I was like, what the fuck? Where are we? He goes, oh, we got a new house. I showed you, but I think you were drunk. I was like, holy shit.
And the question to that answer is, how do you make a comedian?
Yeah, exactly.
He wakes up in his new house and doesn't know it with his real parents.
Hey, open invite to either of you guys if you want to come out and do one of these drive-in movie theater shows for shits and giggles.
Where is it at?
We're doing June 24th in Charlotte, then Tulsa, then Indy, and then Fort Collins. And then I think we're going to keep adding them. And I'm just going to stay out on the bus.
What about one out here in L.A.?
Yeah, I haven't gotten an offer from him.
In Van Nuys, there's or something like that. I would do that. I'd come in and do a guest set and then give you the intro, you know, and I get the same check I paid you, right?
Yeah. By the way, I'm not even getting that, I don't think. No, it's not a moneymaker.
I like the, I would do Tulsa.
Yeah?
I love Oklahoma, man. And I also love that city, man. What is it? What theater is that? The Brady Theater.
Oh,
in Tulsa, Oklahoma is the shit. There was also a promoter there who had this old-ass Cadillac. He let me drive it around before the show. Thing was just like, you know, floating on a cloud. The suspension, everything was messed up, but it was amazing.
Also, Oklahoma, Bill. It'll be like the opening scene to The Outsiders when they hit Pony Boy and Johnny are at the drive-in.
When Dean Del Rey opened for me out there, he went to the – I was too tired. He goes, dude – he's like, the Outsider house is down the street. It's red. You got to go see it. And then, of course, I didn't go. And I came, you know, before the show, how was it? He goes, oh, it was killer. It looks the exact same. You know, Dean makes you just feel like you just met. Nobody can sell you shit like Dean Del Rey. So for our listeners out there, Bert is in Malibu. I believe rolling his own cigars, or he started a vineyard or some shit. I don't know what you're doing, but it definitely looks like, I was just like, you know, after the rioting and stuff, I thought you just left or something.
No, it looks like Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, it's beautiful here. We're like 5 minutes from the beach up in the hills. It's
And you're with your wife?
No, I left her at home. I just thought I'd get away.
Oh, did you leave her at home right near where all the trouble is?
I actually got her a rental right on Fairfax. So hopefully that's something. No, but the girls and my wife.
Tell her to pick some stuff up at Canner's and bring it to you in Malibu.
Wait, where are you guys at? Or I know where Bill is. Bob, where are you close to where the riots are going?
No, I'm up on the, not yet. I'm up on the west side up a hill.
Yeah, it's been crazy, man. Like watching
it's been
it with
so
the girls.
Upsetting. It's been so upsetting, and yet to get into it is
My favorite thing out of all this is when white people explain to black people how they should be feeling and how they should be handling this. That's my favorite thing.
Like they know what they've gone through for 1,000 years.
Well, you know what? You know what the problem? And I have.
I mean,
the same
a million years.
As a person, I have the same problem. Is human beings would rather win then get to what's right. And everything's broken up into teams. Everybody.
I always say that.
Just trying to win.
People just want to be, they just want to be proven that they're right. They don't want the truth.
Yeah. And everybody does that. But the hardest thing in the fucking world is to get out of your own head and realize that someone is experiencing a life different than yours and to actually listen. And then the person telling you, it's really hard for them to explain their life without the other person feeling like they're getting a finger pointed at them. It's a major defect in
humanity.
Humanity, yeah. So until they, because I feel like both sides should be able to sit down and talk this out. Because both sides are thrusted into this thing that we've all, in our own ways, have created.
So, oh, for sure. Were either of you persecuted as a kid? I was. No, I was.
Not for my skin. Actually, for my skin tone. How white I was and how orange my hair was, but it was just sort of standard bullying.
You know,
got pulled over by the cops for having red hair, but I definitely got a couple of towel whippings during gym class. It's about how rough it got for me.
How about you, Bert?
No, I got bullied, but just like a regular kid, like whatever. The I always say, like, I've had it pretty easy in life. Like, I am an example of white privilege, I think.
I was in Norfolk, Virginia, and people threw rocks at my head and called me a Jew. And it happened a lot. And I'm Presbyterian, so I don't understand. But obviously, I am no Jew, but I I brought my ex-wife. That's the advantage of doing this in your office. Look at that ass. Seriously, look at that.
If that's why you married it. But once you find out what was between those two ears. Actually, that haircut is what I looked like when I was in the fifth grade.
Bill, being redheaded is probably, it's like no one stands up for redheads, but redheads are taunted their entire.
No, it wasn't as bad. South Park tipped it over. South Park did that episode, and I was already into adulthood, but they were the ones that brought it to the forefront. That they made it like mainstream, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, like all that ginger shit. No one said ginger here.
No.
Like, no one said that shit. That, like, when I went over to toured in Europe, it was the first time, oh, you're a ginger. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, you got red hair, you're ginger. I was like, oh, all right. But it didn't sound derogatory over there as much as over here. Then it kind of seemed like, oh, someone's kind of just called me a fucking pussy or something. Over here, it just, you know, as everything just seems to take on a little more of a, you know, nastier tone. I don't know what, when it travels. So yeah. I got off easy. No, it was just redhead and bullshit like that. But I didn't have a complex. But once that South Park episode came on, like, that sort of kicked it into, you know, it's weird. Like, you really found with the internet, like, how fucking childish people are and how much that bullying thing really didn't go away as much as you just became an adult.
Yeah.
So you know not to do that. But you get on the internet and it's just like, if there's any way to attack or humiliate or go after somebody that's in a less larger group, I mean, it's just done. From the obvious, all the racial shit, to anything, you know? So.
Well, you're kind of the example. You've influenced me a lot. Because I've been doing a lot of your material, but
I would explain those pathetic awards behind you.
One of them is your mother. But I actually had a replica of where you came out of back there. But all I was going to say,
did that help you out? Did that get you through some lonely nights?
You got a hot mom.
On? Did you take them off?
Your mom's a ginger, but I was just, is that ginger from Gilligan's Island? Is that what that is between Ginger and Marianne? Or is it like 500 years old?
I don't know.
Because no, I thought it was like She's a Betty was from Archie, you know, for the comics. But this, I don't know. Anyway, what I was going to say, Bill, is you're so
fucking Saget was from Full House.
You had to say that. I got some Full House paraphernalia if you want a lunchbox or a t-shirt. What I was going to say was you're so amazing. I'm like this. On stage especially, but if someone throws one rock at me, I throw 1,000 back. I get like a catapult. I mean, if you verbally.
Hey, Bert, did you see how that started off as a compliment for me and then quickly just went to all about Bob?
Yeah, you're right. I haven't had time for therapy, Bill. But you're to me the master of just not putting up with shit. You're just so, and it's coming from such a real place. I just, I really just look up to you a lot because you make me when
I'm
you're
waiting for the overhand right here. This is just such a long setup. Go ahead.
When you pee on me, I'm always looking up to you. But what I'm saying is you're so good. And Bert would agree. Don't you think he's maybe the.
Oh, that's him bailing out. Master he's a poser for this. So he's trying to drag you into this shit that he's just. I think Bert would agree. He's trying to throw it to you.
It's hard for me to throw a compliment to you, Bill. Because you won't accept it. But hey
guys, my wife's naked. Do you want to see?
Hell yeah.
No.
She's naked. Oh, no. I mean, no. Oh, no. No.
Hey, I got one for you. So my wife's about a week away from having our second kid, right?
Congrats. And you're the dad? You're sure?
I don't know. Well, we always get tested. You know, we have sort of an open relationship.
Right.
So... I made her these cheesecake peanut butter cheesecake brownies.
Wait, so I make this over. Peanut butter cheesecake brownies?
Yeah, they're actually fucking delicious. So I'm making them, as I'm tasting them, like, this is going to be fucking crazy. You know, make her some sweets or whatever. Help her up, right? Like, I'm not going to eat half the tray. I'm trying to make myself out to be a hero here. I'm going Bob Saget here. So I make this fucking thing. And they tell you to line the fucking tray with aluminum foil and then spray it. I'm like, that's weird. They usually go parchment paper. But I just find parchment paper just catches on fire. So I go, fine. So I do that, all right? And they finally finish. It's like 11:30 at night. I go to eat one, and it's the worst tasting thing I've ever had in my life.
You did. I know what you did.
I know. It reminded me of this time I ate a burger when I was shit-faced at a Patriots game that had lighter fluid all over it because we thought we had it lit, and then we put the burgers on, and then the fire went out. We were hammered. We were just spraying it all over that. It was that chemical taste. So I was like, Nia, don't eat them. They're the worst thing I ever made. I don't know what the fuck happened. I put 1,000 pounds of sugar in there. How could that taste bad? And the next morning I came downstairs and I saw the slice that I had taken out and I saw the aluminum foil. There's this one tiny piece triangle of aluminum foil. And it's that cheap aluminum foil too. During the pandemic, I can't get the good shit. You know, the stuff that you just hold like this and if you exhale, it rips in half. It was that light. I ate a piece of tin foil.
Ooh, if you have fillings, you're dead. If you got metal fillings.
Yeah. So, dude, and I'm telling you, it was like stuck somewhere between my throat and my stomach for like a day and a half. And I finally got it out of there. So.
You should have called me.
I've had.
I'd be happy to get anything out of your throat.
I'm sure you would.
You're so handsome.
Ah, Jesus Christ. He just always has to make it fucking uncomfortable.
By the way, I love your wife a lot. You know that.
Yeah, a little bit too much. You just tend to stare
at during
your wedding.
Hey, Bob, I have a question. Where have you lived in L.A.?
I started in Palms in a single apartment across from a furniture warehouse. And I was going to go to USC Film School. And then I moved to Hollywood.
Banging out on those couches across the street. And that's how he moved up to the next level and started getting spots at the store.
I moved to Hollywood. I lived on Camino Palmero down the street from the Magic Castle for a while.
Yeah, I know that street.
And then I lived in the Valley on Sepulveda.
That's where he got all his shiny shirts when he goes on stage and headlines. He bought.
I wear the same shirt you wear for 12 years. We got 50 black shirts hanging in the fucking closet. and then I moved to New York to do a show that I got fired from. And then I moved back to LA. I moved a lot.
You had a lot of houses in LA?
I started renting and then I could afford one and I got one in the Valley on Valley Vista in Sherman Oaks. That was my first house that I could afford that I bought. And then I moved to the Palisades and then got divorced and then rented for a while and now I'm in another area, you know, some undisclosed spot.
Yeah.
And how about you?
I don't know. I just started thinking like, because, you know, everyone's talking about moving out of LA. And I was just thinking, if I could live anywhere in the world, where would I want to, like, I mean, meaning like I didn't have to live in LA.
Why are people talking about leaving LA?
I don't know. Because of the fucking coronavirus and.
Oh, that's, I hope they all leave. Get the fuck out of here. There's too many people. Great.
They want to act. Once the shows come back, everybody's going to come out for pilot season.
Yeah.
Does that exist anymore?
No, but I used to have a friend and he used to come out every year from New Jersey for pilot season. Like he was migrating like a geese. I do plural. And I went, what? But you have to be here. You got to be here all the time there. And then there was no more pilot season. There's any time. And now it's like, you know, you develop something and
I used to come out for pilot season. And I would be so excited for the first 2 weeks, you know, the weather, the change of scenery, and then that the subtleness of how difficult a city this is to live in would kick in about 10 days. Like everybody, when they talk about a tough city, they always talk about New York, or, you know, if I can make it there, I can make it then. I always found New York, maybe because I grew up on the East Coast, I just found it way easier because you could sort of escape the business. And when I came out here, I kind of didn't know how to do that. And there was just something about the weather not changing out here. And if you were in a bad place in your career, you got into that Groundhog Day, like, oh, fucking
holy depression. Shit.
Every day, 72 degrees, smoggy. Every day. Every fucking day. And I used to play that, what was it, the L.A. Comedy Club? Remember that one out in Ventura?
No.
It was.
That was after mine.
It was west of the 405 off the 101. It was the only place after a while I could get stage time. And they were going through a bad time, and there wasn't a lot of people coming out to the club. You know, they still had fucking all these old headshots up on the wall. Super fucking depressing. Sorry.
No, I'm sure mine's up there. But I used to go to Newport. They had a Newport Beach. They had the Laugh Stop. And there was one in Houston. Yeah. And that's where I met Kennison, because they forbid him to go to the Comedy Workshop because of his kind of material. And as a result, when I met him and started hanging out with him before he came out here, he chained himself to a telephone pole and put himself in a diaper like Jesus and put a crown of thorns on his head with fake blood dripping down and had his eyes roll back. And they put him on the front page of the Houston Chronicle Arts and Leisure. And then everybody started talking about him because he'd been a, you know, the faith healing business. And then he moved out to LA, and I introduced him to Mitzi. It's like that was fucking fun.
Wait a minute, dude. That's like a huge moment in stand up comedy. You introduced Sam Kinison to
you
Mitzi.
Just glazed over and it. And then I just didn't put a condom on. Anyway, long story. Like
long, three twins later. Those be triplets. But I also introduced him to Rodney Dangerfield. And so we were on the same Young Comedians show that Rodney hosted, and I did 15 minutes, did pretty well, as we say, except people that go, I crushed, you know, I don't know who they are. I guess they're doing really well. And then Sam went on and did 15 minutes, and then the room shook. It was at Dangerfields in New York. And the final thing on HBO, I had 3.5 minutes and Sam had 15. And I said to Rodney, what the hell? He goes, I can't help it, man. I love Sam too much. There was no more time for anybody else.
and he was
right, because Sam was doing the whole bit about, you can't feed the kid, you know. Cameraman's got a sandwich, you know, the star.
Wait, how did you handle that, though? That you must have been pissed, though.
I was hurt. I was the guy that would get hurt, not pissed, because I couldn't get pissed at, right?
Wow, you just described me to a T.
It's so much easier if you fuck somebody over if they get mad. If they get hurt, that's brilliant, because you will carry them. Oh, man, I hurt Bob.
That's why you're healthy. And Rodney felt bad about it, because he was, a neurotic Jew, and he told me I was, you're fucked, man. You're Jew. You're neurotic. You're never going to be happy. That's what he would tell me when I was like 24.
All right, you're on next.
Have a good set, man.
Rodney like? I wish I had gotten to meet him.
He was an interesting guy. He loved pot, smoked every day. He said he didn't care who knew it. He wanted it on his tombstone, that he loved it. He loved to help young comedians because he had such a hard time. And he went through hell. I mean, he was Jacob Cohen. And then he was Jack Roy, and then a club owner gave him the name Rodney Dangerfield. And
Jacob Cohen is such a fucking great name.
Jacob Cohen.
Although Rodney Dangerfield now is.
Rodney Dangerfield is, I mean, it's
pretty iconic. Dangerfield is a. How did he come up with that?
The club owner did it. Came up with, I got it. You're this. That's his version. And when I met him, I was in the Comedy Store in La Jolla. And he walked in, and that weekend, Bruce Baum, a funny guy, friend of mine, and Robin was there all weekend. And I was like the middle guy around all of this insanity. And then Robin would go on after me, and then Rodney would go on after him. And Rodney, when I met him, was in La Costa to clean up from drugs, which was a spa near San Diego. Drugs and booze and he did everything, you know. And he comes in and he goes, I like you, man. I saw you on Merv Griffin's show. You're fucked up. I like you. And he goes, you're funny. You're fucking funny, man. That's all that matters. I was supposed to clean up and go to La Costa, but I can't do it. No booze, no coke, no pot, no pills. I can't do it, man. And I just, how the fuck? He must have said it to 12 people before he said it to me. But no booze, no coke, no pot, no pills is one sentence. You know, it would be a hashtag. And we became friends. He came to the Comedy Store condo where we would stay. Did you guys stay in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I stayed there.
A Letterman one time brought his dogs, and there were fleas in there ever since. So they never defleed the place. Mitzi didn't bring in a service, so there I'd be itching in the bed there. But Rodney would hang out, and we became friends, and we stayed friends. And then I officiated his funeral. I was friends with him for, my God, it's 35, 30, 40 years, some crazy. Wow.
How old was he when he passed?
84. And he shouldn't have
living that life too. Living that life.
Fuck that. I'm 84. I can do 84. If you can booze and party until I can do 84.
Easy. I'll do 100. Hey,
do you guys know, a comedian, Vinnie Mark?
No.
Vinnie Mark, East Coast guy. He used to open for Rodney. He can, first of all, do a dead on Rodney. And he's got some of the greatest stories about him. And one of the ones I remembered as far as like him smoking pot every day was when he would be working in Vegas, Rodney had a one hitter and he'd be walking through the casino and he'd had like two or three opening acts. And when he wanted to take a hit, he'd be like, all right, boys, gather around. They make like a semicircle. And then he'd take a hit. When he was done, he'd be like, all right, break it up. And they would just peel off.
Break it up.
You want to see something cool? I have to go get it. It would take me 1 second to get it. You want to see something cool?
Yeah, just that setup alone. Yes,
it's not going to be my dick. Just
wait. There's something interesting about Bob Saget walking away from camera in his house. It's like this becomes like a reality show. Let's see it, Bob. Okay. You say the last thing so people can look at your house.
Okay, just stare at my desk. Okay, wait right there. All right. Didn't take too long. I hope you guys talked about me. All right, let me plug this shit back in. Okay, here we go. This his widow gave me. This is a box. This is his pot box. It says RD on it.
Wow.
See it. So this inside of it, this is cool as shit. This is inside of it. Is Rodney's pot pipe.
No fucking way.
This is Rodney's fucking pot pipe. I also have here, because I've done these scleroderma benefits, and Bill, you've been kind enough to do it, and Bert, I'm gonna ask you too, because we try to help people. This is a fucking awesome picture.
Wow.
Oh my God.
The only problem with that picture is Lovitz, but otherwise.
who's on the far, far right? Is that Tim Allen?
That's Tim Allen.
Robin, John Lovitz, Rodney Dangerfield. Who's to the left?
That'd be Saget.
That's you?
The guy over here is me.
Turn your head to the side.
Let's see which side that is.
Just look at the photo.
My left side. So look, it's not going to work in a lineup.
I don't think that's you. I don't think you were there. That is not you.
That's me. I was
like a fucking senator from
great teeth.
That's what I got something better. You ready?
Yeah.
You're gonna fucking love this. His wife gave this to me. I've never shown it to anybody, but you guys asked about him and I'm on the inner sanctum. I got a bottle and I talked about it in a special. It's a bottle of Rodney Dangerfield Viagra.
Oh wow. Oh, my God.
It's Dangerfield, and it says Viagra.
Talk about not giving a fuck. He didn't even go with, like, an alias.
No, I know, right? It's weird. Yeah,
I got to have these pills. My dick's not going up anymore, okay?
Anyway.
Hey, have you ever smoked weed out of that pot, out of that bowl?
No, weed does not agree with me, but if I'm going to do it, it's going to be out of that. But I'm going to probably clean it up a little bit.
Please invite me to that.
Okay. Maybe that's what we'll do behind the drive-in screen. What, Bill? I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that if you smoke out of that, that's like some comedian meets Native American, like peyote fucking something.
Wow.
And Bill, I was influenced by him for dick jokes. If you listen to him, he would just go, do a tight 50, man. Just 50. That's all you gotta do. And it was all dick jokes. It was, you know, it was a joke. Sometimes you'd hear, did someone else say that? But it was a Rodney joke. You know, shooting, having sex at my age is like shooting pool with a rope. You know, that's, it was all dick jokes. And then he'd, in the middle of his set, if he was having a good set, which was most of the time, because he was just machine gun, he'd go, I'm fucking funny, all right?
That's hilarious. I would love that uncomfortable, that thing where he would do, it was the thing he would do with his mouth. He just looked like, he always looked like he was getting interrogated.
That's how he looked at life. He would tell me that to stay alive as a comedian, and if you're a Jew, like, that's how he looked at life. He would be like, getting out of Germany during World War II is you do a tight 6 minutes for the guard at the border. And if you're funny, you get out of Germany. If you do a good 6 minutes, that's all it takes, man. Sick. But he gave me 3 on the special. What the fuck?
God.
But I was close with him, and he was a big influence, as was Richard. I mean, I fucking at the store. I was like 22 and hanging out with Richard, and then I ended up doing a movie with him, and he was it's crazy.
Which
shit.
Movie were you with, the toy?
Critical Condition.
Oh, okay.
Where he's in the gown and he's going like this.
He's a fake doctor. He's a convict that escaped, and he pretends he's a doctor. And it had great actors in it. It had Rachel Ticketon and Joe Mantegna and Ruben Blades, who was almost the president of Panama, and Randall Tex Cobb, and all these weird, eclectic, wonderful people. And
Tex Cobb has a great IMDb.
He does?
He's always in good movies. Raising Arizona, wasn't he in that?
Oh, he was.
Oh, wait, is that who that is?
Yeah, he was also in those Chuck Norris movies about getting the POWs back. What's it called?
He's a good actor.
I think they're literally called Mission in Action. Mission in Action 1, 2, 3 or something like that, yeah.
And obviously the nicest guy. Like, fucking nice. So nice.
You know, you know what movie I saw last night, late night, that was on that is a perfect movie for what it is What About Bob?
What About Bob is a great fucking movie.
The way Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss play off each other in that movie is just genius. And there's not an ounce of fat on it because I was totally engaged. And, you know, old man, I started dozing off to the end. I felt like I fell asleep for 3 minutes. I'm like, it's over already? And it's just like, yes, it's so fucking tight.
Yeah. Dude,
we every time we eat, I apparently do what Bob does when he eats, when he's like, And my daughters will just start doing it with me. Anytime a joke, you can hear a joke, be it in a movie or in stand-up, and then it plug into your life, and you can just share it with your family, and it'd be like, now your running joke. That's one fucking, I love that shit.
Yeah.
That movie is interesting because it draws you in the way that kind of Analyze This does in its own way years later. But then the third act of One About Bob goes way over the top because the mania and the neurosis of Bill Murray is like, you know, it's an 11. But it really works. It's really unusual that it works, that it's that crazy. It's one of my favorite comedies.
Yeah.
Besides the Pete Davidson movie that I have yet to see June 12th.
Dude, I just tried. They sent me an email, Bill, and they were like, "Hey, if you'd like to watch this screen, watch a movie, Judd Apatow and Pete would like you to watch it." And I was like, "Great." I must have sent 100 fucking emails trying to get that screener. That is the one movie my wife is dying to fucking see.
Yeah, mine too. You know,
whatever they did with that trailer, it's been crushing, and everybody seems to be wanting to watch it. So, of course, you know, there's also the F is for Family trailer. There's a lot of Bill Burr on June 12th, and then the well just dries up.
Not for long.
I don't have anything after that.
Oh,
those things don't hit. Old Billy Boy's going back to his parents' house.
Oh, sure. That ain't happening. You're super crazy.
So wait, Bill, talk about the movie for a little bit. I'd love to hear you talk about it.
All right. I've seen it. It's great. I think it might be Judd's best work. And I had a massive panic attack before I did it. And
why?
I have a tendency to, if I look too far down the fucking road, I get overwhelmed. You know, I had this big part, you know, there was a bunch of stuff in the role that I had never done before. So it was outside my comfort zone. I was leaving LA and where I live and all of my shit. And now I'm not going to see my kid, but fortunately they came along, but you know, the deal, you're still working 12, 14 hour days. So, I had that comedian, like I should just do stand up. You know, I just fucking do my dick jokes. I get my fucking money and then I go home and I just fucking sit there. Like I had that whole, why am I trying to do this? You know, every time I'm in one of these, then fucking Aquaman Part 7 comes out and buries whatever movie I was in. And all I was just away from my kids. So I had this massive fucking panic attack. And, you know, my friends and my wife talked me off the fucking ledge. And I was like, all right. And then I went down there the first day. I had a good time. I didn't get fired. And then it just became like this great hang. I just had fun. And all the firefighters and actors, we all bonded. We're just breaking balls before we went on, during the scenes, after. And then Pete Davidson just sort of set the tone where, you know, he was there first and left last. And if he could shoot you out and get you out of there, he would do it, which is really unprecedented behavior by someone number one on the call sheet. Because usually, you know, they do all their coverage and the lead jumps in their SUV and fucking leaves. And then everybody else is hanging out. And he was just, he was awesome.
Well, because of his life, he has so much wisdom at such a young age because of the hardship. And your plan is, I mean, what you're playing his dad, man. That's like...
Oh, I'm not playing his dad, you fucking jerk off. I'm playing the
is
guy...
Steve Buscemi his dad?
No. It's Buscemi.
Oh, he told me it was Buscemi. Because
no, if I was at your house right now, I'd take one of your awards away from you.
Oh. I love that. That moment is my favorite moment ever because Bill's so serious and you're playing his daddy. You fucking
I thought you were his dad in the movie.
No, that's the whole point, is he's not his dad. He's fucking his mom.
See, you know who told me you were his dad? I'm not going to tell you. Somebody that we both know.
Oh.
I was misinformed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a quick trailer. How would you know?
I knew. Well, you know, the story is that his dad dies in 9/11 and then you see him with him. It would be really.
That's also not what happens.
Oh, for real? It's not. I thought it was based on his life.
It is. But they took the 9/11 aspect out of it because that.
Don't spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, no, it's not a spoiler. They actually have talked about it in interviews. So I'm not. They took that element out of it so we could sort of avoid the Hatfields and McCoys. Of, you know, oh, George Bush, it happened, oh, Bill Clinton didn't do this, red tie, blue tie, screaming and fucking yelling and all of that shit. So they just sort of like, you know, I think they just sort of made it something that, you know, you can go in and watch and experience the story, where I think like 9/11 was something that where everybody experienced, everybody has some sort of sad emotion connected to it. I think it would have been a little too heavy. It was kind of a brilliant move to take it outside of that, I think.
It's so funny. The way I heard it is that his dad did die in 9/11 in the movie, and that you and him bond and then find Bin Laden. But I guess that's not what happens.
That is what happens, and you just ruined the second act.
The truth is, I heard, Bill, that you play Bin Laden in the movie.
That's not true, but when we meet Bin Laden, we actually hit it off. So it becomes this weird thing. We start playing cards, and afterwards we know that we have to kill him. And, you know... It's one
That's
of those
painful.
Things, like, am I going to get past the I'm in this country and you're in that country, or are we going to get down to the human to human thing? And I hate to say it, we chose patriotism.
Hey, what's Judd Apatow like as a director? Is he like super like, great job, Bill? Or is he one of those guys like, look, if we're moving on, that means we got it?
I never had a guy who said, look, if we're moving on, we got it. Jeez, how fucking needy are you on set? Somebody said that to you?
Dude, I am very fucking neat.
You sucked. That's why we're moving all the cameras. We've given up on you. No, he was great. And
we're never going to get you. Moving on.
Yeah. Moving on.
The guy's costing us money. Let's go rewrite his part.
We'll loop him.
I did have a showrunner one time on a pilot come up to me at like 2 a.m. Elliot Gould told me I should ad lib, right? And so I ad libbed at 2 a.m. and Elliot Gould's playing a blind guy. He's blind with a dog and he's standing behind me and we can't get this line. And Elliot Gould just goes, I'd ad lib if I were you. And so I do an ad lib out and everyone laughs. All the execs are still there. It's 2 a.m. Showrunner comes up and he's like, great, great, great. We're going to do it one more time. And then leans into me, goes, you're fucking me in the asshole right now. And walks away. And Elliot Gould, still playing the blind guy, goes, sorry.
I have a similar story.
Wait, what is it?
Similar story. I was doing a movie and the scene wasn't working. And the lead was going, this scene doesn't make any sense. My character wouldn't be fucking standing here. And if he touched me, I would fucking take my gun out about doing that shit. So there's tension because they know you can't just fucking rewrite the scene. It was pretty intense fucking thing. So anyway, the lead, he starts improvising. I'm in the scene and he's talking to me. He's saying shit that isn't on the script. So I'm like, all right, I guess we're improvising. So we go back to one and action, and I come in and I just start improvising. The whole fucking thing falls apart, and all of a sudden, the hatchet man, the fucking big time producer, all right, we'll try one more. And then he slowly just got right in my grill and barely above a whisper. He just got in my face. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? You don't fucking improv in this fucking set. You say what the fuck is on the fucking page. Who the fuck do you think you are? And just fucking, he said like 50 fucks in my face. And I was just sitting there going like, I was kind of smiling at first thinking he was joking. And he wasn't. And then, you know, then you're thinking like, why didn't you yell at the other guy? He was also improv. That's right. He's the big star, right? Long story short, in my head, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? I'm a comedian. I don't need this shit. Nobody has yelled. I haven't let anybody yell at me like that since my dad way back in the day. Dude, I was up to like 3 a.m. thinking about this shit, all the shit that I wanted to say. And I knew I couldn't say anything because he was the powerful guy and he was going to tell the story and that was going to be the truth. So I didn't fucking say anything. And it ended up being a great thing because that guy ended up hooking me up, just straight up hooking me up with a part in a movie like a couple of years later. And I got to know him and we hit it off and he was one of the coolest, funniest fucking guys ever. It was just a bad day on set and I was in his sights and I did that little thing and he fucking took his day out on me. But you know what? I kept my mouth shut and I took it like a man. Now I love the guy. That's what's fucking hilarious is now I love the guy.
Well, when you go through that shit together, it's an emotional thing. It's like you're actually... you don't hate me, but you're a really good actor, really good. And Mike Binder, our mutual friend, directed you in Black or White, and you played Costner's brother. And if people haven't seen that, did you see that movie, Bill? I mean, Bert?
Yes, I did. I fucking loved that movie.
I love that movie.
I forgot Bill was in it. Bill creeps up in every fucking movie. I was talking about a movie. I go, did you ever see that movie about Gary Hart? And he goes, I was fucking in it.
That's the movie he ad-libbed in.
I so disappear into the character that you don't even know it's me. Once you put a little mustache on me, where did Bill go?
But did you love Black
pronounced Boston accent still all up in the mix? Hey, all right, a little bit of advertising here. All right, Manscaped, everyone, listen up, fellas, because today we have a new Manscaped product alert. Manscaped just released the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. Take a look in the mirror and I guarantee you'll see hairs sticking out of those holes. It's time to keep your ear and your nose hairs looking as nice as your clean shaven pubes. There's a lot of truth to this because I had a conversation with somebody I always wanted to meet and I swear to God, he had fucking these nose hairs coming out. I could have done pull-ups on if my shoulder was a little healthier. I guess that's the funny story about nose and ear here I just told. ear hair. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Weed Whacker. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses 9,000 RPMs motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. Its intelligently contoured design enhances the trimming experience. You might enjoy it, fellas. And it's waterproof, which makes it easy for operation and cleaning. The only nose hair trimmer on the market with a powerful and rechargeable lithium ion battery that lasts for up to 90 minutes of use. Jesus, George the Animal Steel could use this fucking thing. Have you ever pulled your nose hairs out with your fingers? That might hurt worse than nicking your balls. Manscaped is making whacking your weeds a time to look forward to, delivering maximum confidence while providing hygiene. I'm getting this fucking thing. Because those scissors, if they have the points, they poke your nose. If they're rounded, they can't get everything. Yes, you will get a replacement blade every 3 months to keep your weed whacking time clean and enjoyable. Look, fellas, 79%, sorry, I'm dyslexic, of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff. It's time to upgrade your Manscaped routine with the Weed Whacker. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BillBurtWW. That's BillBurtWW. At manscaped.com. Thank you, Manscaped, for keeping our pubes trimmed and our hairs in our holes looking nice. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BillBurtWW at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code BillBurtWW. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds.
Dude, you know, I that was like a movie
that was 20 minutes too fucking long.
No, but it's a good product. It's actually one of my sponsors. When you came on as a guest on my thing, you had to explain to me how a podcast works. And I got lucky enough to have Manscaped as one of my sponsors. I've got their product inside my anus right now.
Well, that's how I actually, that's my Bob Saget, like that Tom Hanks character I brought up that I could remember. Now I can't. Was he
Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump. That's my Forrest Gump moment. I introduced Bob Saget to fucking podcasting.
For real?
Well, it's Monday. It aired. It aired? Do you call it aired? What do you call it? It's up? What do you say?
Uploaded. Released.
Yeah, uploaded. It's loaded. It's ejaculated into people's faces and ears. And Bill, the name of it is, he rips me a new one because he basically, I know you got to do a spot, Bert, but Bill basically told me what my act was. He says, your act is nothing more. Do you want to say it or can I say it, Bill? Do you want me to say it?
You know I was just joking. I love you.
I didn't take it to heart.
Wait a minute, Bob. Bob, did I hurt you?
No, I love you.
Don't fucking say that.
No, when you make fun of me, it makes me feel like you love me. That's how fucking sick I am mentally. But you said...
That's true. I love you so much, I hate you.
Same here. I love you so... I hate you so much right now. Bert, he said my act is nothing more than all the lines on Full House they wouldn't let me say. And I take those lines and I say fuck around them. He said, that's all my act is. And I thought about it.
I don't remember saying that.
You know, it's around.
You know, I was just fucking around.
It's right wrapped around my Manscaped commercial. So Bert's got one.
All right, you ready? Do you enjoy wine but wonder what's actually in it? Fit Vine Wines puts all that out in the open with less than 1 gram of sugar per bottle, fewer sulfites, less tannins. Fit Vine Wines are just grapes. Better yet, Fit Vine Wines are gluten-free, vegan, paleo, and keto-friendly. Less sugar, less tannins, no flavor additives, lower carbs, full flavor. Also, every wine has less than 0.09 grams of sugar per glass or less than 1 gram per bottle, with some bottles having as little as 0.01 grams of sugar per glass. Gluten-free, vegan-friendly, paleo-friendly, keto-friendly, non-GMO. I fell in love with Fit Vines. They're Syrahs. I did a taste test with my friends, and you cannot tell the difference. I'm being dead serious. The Syrah is my favorite of all the red wines, and my wife is in love with their Prosecco. Their Prosecco is super great. If you can find Fit Vines in most stores, but we were in lockdown, so we didn't. We went to fitvinewines.com where you can buy online and get delivery straight to your door. But if you want to find a location to get Fitvine Wines, go to fitvinewines.com and use their store locator, whether you like red wine, white wine, rosé, or Prosecco like my wife. Fitvine has you covered with less sugary, dietary-friendly, full-bodied wines made for you. Enjoy responsibly.
That was great. I'm so glad they got rid of the tannins. That was my one thing against wine. I couldn't stand the tannins.
Well, it's very acidic, and it can burn through all the way through. And if you have leakage and you haven't manscaped, it'll drip down your leg into your work boots. So that's
it'll rust out your manscaper that you have inserted in your ass, Bob.
That's correct. And
that's from season 3 of Full House. All right, Policy Genius, everyone. You know, there's never a bad time to save money, but now more than ever, finding smart ways to put some cash back in your pocket can make a difference. One way to do that is to simply save on the things you already pay for, like home insurance. If you own a home, reshopping your home insurance rates with Policy Genius could save you a good chunk of change. And the best part is, you barely need to lift a finger to do it. Motivate your audience. Come on, people. You can do it. Type Policy Genius on .com on your computer and save money on home insurance today. First, head to policygenius.com and answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then Policy Genius will compare your policy against options from top insurers to make sure you're getting the right home insurance coverage at the best possible price. If Policy Genius finds you a better rate than what you're currently paying, they'll do all the work and get you switched. Own a car too? Policy Genius will compare your home and auto policies across different insurers and even mix and match to find you savings. They save their customers on average of $1,127 per year just doing that. I'll tell you, that's a lot of Manscaped products you could buy with $1,127. So if you'd like to put a little cash back in your pocket right now, see how much you can save by reshopping your home insurance rate at policygenius.com.
Yeah, you shake up that accent.
I did love that fucking movie. I really love that movie.
Same. Bill, did you love making it?
Which, black or white?
Black or white. We know the Pete Davidson thing was a love fest.
That was another one where it was, you know, there was Kevin Costner, Octavia Spencer. There was a lot of seasoned / Oscar winning people that I was doing scenes with, and some incredible character actors and stuff like that. So yeah, I had I was pretty green at that point. So I've learned a lot of things since then, where I used to be really just like, you know, this is the scene and we're doing this scene and I would know all the lines. And now I'm doing this scene. I wasn't looking at how they all connected in right. The arc of this person that I was playing. I've tried to learn how to do that a little bit more. But
well, it doesn't show in your newer work. But the thing about Black or White is you were so, maybe that inexperience made you so vulnerable to be able to play his brother and his lawyer. I mean, it was just something really special. And Kevin, I'd known a long time. I haven't seen him in a long time, but he's a really good guy.
I wasn't really his brother.
No, you weren't?
No.
And you weren't Pete Davidson's father?
No.
I don't know your work.
People seem to enjoy my acting performances, but they never quite understand
who you are.
I'm related to whoever I'm talking to.
So they just see you. They know you're good, but they don't know. You're so out of character that they don't know who you're playing.
Wait.
I had somebody recently, one of the guys over at Barstool Sports, he fucking told me he watched the movie and he loved it and then asked, hey, did you do this in the movie? I go, yeah, I thought you watched it. I said, I can't remember. So it's either something I'm doing or everybody with the cell phones up to their heads for 10 years before you got the hands-free devices. Maybe.
No, I went to a screening. Mike invited me of a rougher cut of it. And Nia was there. I was with your wife.
I mean, how you said that.
That's why I didn't pay attention to the movie. I was with your wife.
What's Kevin Costner like? I want to. I feel like I know him. I feel like Bull Durham and fucking Tin Cup are two of my favorite movies that define who I am as a dude.
And Field of Dreams.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. And Dances with Wolves, for fuck's sake.
Way out.
Dances with Wolves.
I hate to do this, but I did the Groundlings with him before American Flyer came out, which is one of his first big ones that was got him noticed. And he had been cut out of The Big Chill. He was the corpse in The Big Chill.
What was the other one? Fandango?
Yeah.
Sorry, I always interrupt the story. Finish your story.
No, I always do. But we did the Groundlings together, and we did improv, a workshop with Barbie Benton, Hefner's lady for a while. And every situation, he's such a good actor, and he had to deal with the moment so much that they do the exercise where you hand someone a ball, an imaginary ball, and you receive it, and you, with whatever energy you're getting from the other actor, you're taking the ball and then you give it to the other person. Someone comes at him and gives him this ball, imaginary ball, and the energy from this other actor was just like Keystone Cops. And Kevin just holds the ball and he doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't know what he was getting from this guy because the guy was a lunatic. And then he finally it was literally 4 minutes where he's holding the ball and everybody's like, oh, this guy. I mean, and I'm like, you're amazing. You're so good. And then we made out and got a hotel.
Did you have drinks with him, Bill?
We went bow fishing.
What?
Yeah, we went bow fishing. And after we wrapped, I went out and I got a fishing license. And I went out with him and like three, four other people. And we had a blast. I just remember those guys, those Cajun dudes. We were fishing at night, and they'd be flashing the light on the water and be like, right there, right there, right there, right there. And then you fucking let the thing go. We caught some fish, ate it. It was delicious. And, he was like a guy's guy. Definitely a guy's guy. And really, you know, I think he has 7 kids, so he definitely has that fatherly vibe. Or, you know,
7 fucking kids?
Yeah.
Is it that many?
He's got a lot of kids. Yeah, so he has he's a guy's guy. Outdoorsman, hunter, father. Yeah,
very beginning when I knew him, when I was close with him, the kind of guy he was, from the very beginning, always knew what he wanted to do, very convicted to what he wanted to do, period. He was going to do it his way, and that is how he does what he does, with passion. And I had just gotten a show in New York on CBS, and we stayed friends for a while after the Groundlings. So he did the Untouchables. And so he calls and says, I want to take you to the premiere. And he took his wife at the time, the mom of some of his kids, and my wife at the time, the mom of my kids. And he picked us up at our apartment in New York in a limo. And he comes in to the premiere and he puts his arm around me and introduces me to De Palma and De Niro. And here I am, you know, in 1987 on some CBS morning program, and he's the star of like a definable movie, not just for his career but period. And he's such a loyal guy, such a good, I'll just never forget that kind of a guy's guy friendship, loyal guy.
He's an interesting type of movie star because he isn't technically an action star. Like, you think, when you think male movie stars, you think like Schwarzenegger and Stallone and like those guys, like Bruce Willis. He's like an emotional, but not a rom-com. He's like an emotional movie, like almost like a sports without being a sports movie star.
It's like the love of baseball. I mean, they kept telling him, don't make another baseball movie. And he's like, well, fuck that. It's the script that matters, and it's a story. And then he's also a romance star because he's a good-looking guy. So it's probably what Bill's going to go through, I think, after this Pete Davidson movie. He's going to get a lot of – Bill, you would be an amazing action star.
Yeah, Bill, what's your white whale? What's your movie you want to do? Like, is it action? Is it straight comedy? Like, meaning, like, like slapstick comedy, like Tommy Boy. Like if the studio said you could make any movie you want, you're Bill Burr, we're gonna put $100 million behind it. What's the movie you make?
Oh, what? Oh my, I don't. Well, the
and
one
Bob,
I just
get ready.
Wrote,
you're next.
The one I just wrote with Ben Tischler. No, I kind of like. I like doing comedies and I like doing dramas. So like anytime there's a movie that has both, which is why or TV show, it's why I love Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad and Goodfellas were like two of the great dark comedies I think that ever happened. So recently, the movie that I saw in the last couple of years that I absolutely fucking loved, that had comedy and drama in it, was The Nice Guys. I don't know if you guys saw that. That had Ryan Gosling and...
oh, my God. I was on the treadmill the other day. And
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The scene where Ryan Gosling, by the way, I'm on the treadmill and I see Nice Guys and I'm like, what the fuck is this? I don't know anything about it. Turn on Ryan Gosling, punches his through the window. Is it the very beginning? And he's like, oh God, oh God. I was crying laughing. I ended up recording the movie and I'm like, this movie is, it had me. And then Russell Crowe, the next one, I fucked your father. Within 2 minutes, I haven't seen the whole thing though.
Both of their performances in that movie, and then the guy who plays the bad guy, who gets the blue paint. I don't ruin it for people. You have to see that movie. And then the stuff that Ryan Gosling does, he's such a student of comedy.
Yeah,
evidently.
100%.
He does a nod to like Abbott and Costello routine where he can't talk and he's doing this thing.
Yeah.
The physical comedy that he does.
He knows everything about comedy.
And then the way he can throw away a line, or like I just was blown away. And then Russell Crowe is just so like, he like talk about a guy's guy. That's one of my favorite performances Russell Crowe's ever done. And I loved his leather jacket too, was the shit. So those, like, if I could be in fucking movies like that, that have like, that are funny as hell, but there's also like, you know, there was, the stakes are really high. There was a lot of drama. Like those are the perfect movies.
You'll do it.
All right, Bob, here's your question. If they said they could, you get to remake one movie. They're like, we want to do a remake, any remake. We want you to star in it. What movie do you want to remake?
Is this my question?
Yeah, that you star in.
The Passion. Because I want to be beaten, and I have a complex that I want to help everybody.
Oh, that was such a great answer.
I thought you were going to say Cruising, that Al Pacino movie.
Yeah. But fists scare me in all forms, no matter how they are, whatever position they're in.
Crying Game.
Oh, that'd be so cool. I want to be revealed. Kiss of the Spider Woman. That's what I want to do. Maybe Deliverance, but you run it backwards.
Deliverance, just one scene.
just the one scene. Teeth come out and you hear that sound. I don't know about remakes. I mean, I have a Jimmy Stewart complex, you know, but all the great stuff he did, that'd be Tom.
What are you going to Jimmy Stewart after talking about sucking some redneck's dick in the fucking woods?
I didn't say that. I didn't say those words.
All right, the sound effects of it. Sorry, I was basically.
I made a sound effect. It could apply to anything. Maybe the guy stepped in something.
Jesus, you're going to be a future fucking Supreme Court justice. You just sidestepped all your past, didn't you?
I think you should do like a more evolved 48 hours type of thing and just blow the screen up like Eddie did with some actor that you just think is the shit. You know, some great actor.
Well, I would be the Nick Nolte, I think.
Yeah, Bill's Nick Nolte. But I'll be Eddie.
But what if he's not?
We'll do it together, Bill.
You guys should do it together. And you should try it out at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Workshop it.
I would like any movie that you do where your character gets a cool old car.
Fletch.
I'm in on that.
I would love to remake Fletch. Like, Fletch is one of my favorite movies ever, but that it stinks that Chevy Chase isn't a nice person, that everyone hates him.
Well, I directed him in Dirty Work. So he was really easy to work with, and we only had him for a week, but we also had Chris Farley for a week, and that that was the sweetest of all people. But Chevy was nice until I showed him a clip, until I showed him a screening in New York of the film, and it left out one bit that he did. He was not happy about that. But I didn't have any trouble with him, but I've heard that also.
Yeah. Wait, I want to talk about Norm, Bob, because I know that you love Norm, and I fucking love Norm. I think Norm's maybe an American treasure.
He is one of the funniest people alive, I think.
Ever.
Yeah. And we are talking about possibly trying to do a sequel, and we've got some permission of the big cheeses, but we're not there yet. But you'd both have to be in it if we do it. So that's all there is to it, because funniest people. We need to – Norm is regarded by most funny people to be one of the funnier people alive. And we've had some real interesting shit happen together. It's, I made Dirty Work. So that's a year with Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
And it's like Entertainment Tonight was there while I was directing it. And it, for the cameras, he goes, I'm whispering in his ear some stuff, giving him some notes. He goes, why am I listening to the dad from Full House? Why am I taking direction from the video guy?
God.
He just states the obvious as loud as he can. And he also knows the secret of quiet. When you get real quiet, how you draw people in. And then he just, construction of things is amazing.
Oh, he's
the best opening joke, I thought, when he hosted SNL after he'd gotten fired, and then they ended up bringing him back.
Right.
He goes, yeah, so I got fired from this show for not being funny enough. So now I'm hosting it. So evidently either I got a lot funnier or this show sucks. That's how he opened.
At my roast, he says, Saget, I can't roast you. You're my friend. That's a real good impression, isn't it? It's me with a slight less bass. And I go, Norm, just do it and curse a little bit. I don't want to curse. I'm going to read jokes from a 40s joke book. I went, Norm, I don't know. So he sits there, and while everyone else is roasting me, he's reading the sports section. That's what he did. You know, his little Andy Kaufman, weird off the rails kind of thing. And then he gets up there and he does like a 15-minute set. It gets cut down to about, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 minutes where it's really amazing. But there was silence in the room because he just, like Johnny Carson, was just reading cards of these old jokes. And then one point he went, you got a face like a flower, a cauliflower, no laugh. He goes, I'm saying you got a fucking dog face, okay? And I'm going like, yeah, that. And he gets a huge laugh. And then he started to curse a little bit, and then he got emotional because we're friends. And he started saying, I love you. I don't like to make fun of my friends, and I just think the world of you. And then we man-hugged and made love.
I saw that. I saw that that roast. Me and DeRosa loved it.
Thanks.
DeRosa called me up. He goes, you got to see Norm Macdonald. He's just doing jokes from like 60 years ago and stays committed to it.
That's the brilliance of him. His last special on Netflix was amazing, and he wrote a book that's amazing. I mean, he's very prolific. But
he's always about the joke. Like everything is about, like, that's why I love comics where it almost seems like he's never turning it off. Like it's always, there's always a joke. We were going to do, when my special came out, hey big boy, streaming right now on Netflix. When my special came out, I was going to do
beer belches.
I was going to do a Colin Stick to Work show at the store, and Norm and Spade were going to, Bill was going to do it. Everyone was going to do it. Norm and Spade were going to come by. And then obviously, you know, the pandemic hit. And so the day my special dropped, it's stay at home orders. No one's leaving. So the morning of St. Patty's Day was, which is everyone stay at home. And that's the day we're going to do the Colin Stick to Work tour show. I get a text from Norm, or a DM from Norm. Hey, is that show still on today?
He ended up doing a set at the Improv.
Smiling to himself, you know, like just.
Did you guys see last night? I watched that documentary. It's on Hulu that's about the Dana Carvey show. You guys watch that?
No, I have to, because I kind of...
It's fucking unbelievable. The level of guys that were writing and acting on that show.
Yeah.
And the sketches that they did. And then the first sketch that they did to kick the show off, it was just like Chappelle's show, where it was like, this is our mission statement and we're not backing down. It was one of the, it was such an inspirational thing to watch.
Was that the one with nipples, where he had all the nipples?
Bill Clinton had the nipples and was breastfeeding, then had a duck's ass, and it just kept going and going and going. And he was breastfeeding, they had real milk coming out of it, and the puppies were licking it. This was on prime time right after Tim Allen's show.
It was on ABC, I remember.
Yeah, and they just, there was a moment where they were going to do it on HBO, and they're like, no, you want to be, because he was so big, they put him in that place. And just watching the balls that Dana Carvey had, and just that old school fucking, fuck you, this is funny and this is what we want to do. And Smigel and Louis C.K. and all of these guys that were on it, Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert. It's just, dude, I mean, it was like they had the Mount Rushmore of fucking comedy writers and performers, and 90% of America, myself included, I don't know where the fuck I was, missed it. It was only got like 8 episodes.
It's I think 6. And he's one of the most talented. At this moment, he should just be celebrated. I'm looking forward to him doing something really that shows he's an anomaly. You know, he's
so fucking.
It seemed
fun.
Like it all worked out because that show didn't like do what they thought it was going to do. He got to see his kids growing up, because that is the trade-off that people don't seem to see. But what's the matter, Bert? It's true.
Yeah, I know. But I get bummed when you hear stories like. This sounds silly, but I'm sure someone can understand it. But like when you hear stuff like Rick Moranis lost his wife and then he raised his kids, you go, that's great. And then you go, but I also loved him in movies. You know, like I still want to see him work. I want to see it work. I don't want to like lose the artist. I still, you know what I mean?
I was directing something a couple years ago and I made an offer to Rick. And I heard back from his attorney. And really polite, and it was verbatim. He read what Rick wrote to me, that he just doesn't want to do it anymore. But he was so honored, and he said he loved my work, and he wanted to. It was a nice get out of, you know, not do this thing, but it meant a lot to me, because he's another one person that's just so fucking funny, just
so fucking
presence.
Funny.
What was that first movie he did, the Canadian one, and they were playing hockey?
Strange Brew with Dave Thomas.
God. I love that movie. He was in the crease. He was in the crease when those guys slammed into him.
And those were SCTV characters. That was a sketch on SCTV, he and Dave Thomas. He's in Little Shop of Horrors. He's like, you can't picture anyone. And it's a musical, right? So some people just get turned off to it right away. But he just pulls you in. So besides, it's a great musical. If you like him, some people don't. But he's so lovable. And in Ghostbusters, he's just so lovable and so funny. It's just and so I feel what you say, Bert. I mean, it's selfish to love someone's work so much and go, I know you've had a hard time, but please don't stop. You know, please, because we funny people are so.
But he didn't stop. He kept doing. Dana Carvey kept doing stand up.
Oh yeah, I was talking about Rick Moranis. I was talking about Rick. Yeah, Dana's out there and Dana's doing it. But he's a real wonderful.
He did that
guy.
Movie with Danny Glover. What was the movie he did with Danny Glover where he? It's the silliest movie.
That's Martin Short. It's Pure Luck.
Oh, never mind.
Martin Short. I can't talk.
Martin, what are you going to Andrew for? He fucking gave me, you know, for a guy sitting in Malibu with a fucking little sun hat on, you're pretty prickly.
Hey, give him a break. I mean, hey, I thought
his kids. He should have kept doing stand up. I need more content.
I need more content.
I know you lost your wife, but please, Make me happy.
Oh. Yeah. He goes, what was the name of that movie? And he just tells you, and you're like, oh, well, there you go.
Well, look what Martin Short's been through, and he's one of the funniest people alive, and he hasn't stopped. He's not going to stop. So
I didn't know he had been through something. I don't want to hear it, though. I don't want to hear the tragedy.
It's the same as Rick Moranis.
Oh, brother.
You were very good. You know what you got to say about those guys? How cool. I don't know. I've had two beers. I shouldn't say a fucking thing.
Say it.
No, say it, Bert. You seem like you had an interesting thought there.
Yeah, no, Bill seems real interested.
You know what good guys they are when they lose their wives and then they go, you know, I'm going to stop working. I'm going to raise my family. I'm going to settle down. Like, if I lost my wife, I'd be like, okay, we're moving to Austin. I'm getting a new wife. She's going to be younger, hotter, faster, quicker. She's not going to think much. But, like, I'd just be like, I'll be on the road nonstop. The girls are going to boarding school. I'm going to fucking party my dick off. Like, those guys do that, and then you're like, well, what great guys they are.
Bert, I would recommend your wife not watch this episode. I can't wait till I lose my wife and I get to party and go to Austin. I'm going to be so hammered and so many chips.
No, that was a laugh I've never heard from Bert. He was like,
We one time, we were out on a date, and we were talking about what we would do if the other person died today. Like, what would you do? She was like, I'd want you to start over. I'd want you to keep living your life. I go, oh, I will. She was like, wait, what about me? You want me to keep living my life? I went, no, not at all. Like, I want, like, it's different. I'm bigger. Like, I want you to really, like, hold down the vigil for a few years, you know, like 10 years. And then, you know,
keep
10
the
years
memory
later,
of me alive.
Keep the memory of me alive. Like,
yeah, don't have happiness yourself.
Yeah, make a documentary about me.
Make a documentary about me.
Hey, go back to the Dana Carvey documentary that you saw on Hulu. What's interesting about it? Do they show the making of? Is there behind the scenes footage?
They got all of that stuff, and then they have stuff that didn't air, and then they have all the cast members talking about it. And they had like one of the, was great too. They had one of the network executives that was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And he was explaining his position, which was really great. And just the overall, like, just the amount of talent that was in that room, that it didn't connect and that they didn't stop doing what they were doing. And they went out on their own terms. And whenever you see it, reminds me of like when Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble did the Monterey Jazz Festival and they got booed. And Stevie, you could see, was affecting him, but every song when he went to play, he was just tearing into everything, and they just still did their shit. There's something about that it's almost more inspiring than watching great people do something that the general public likes. To watch somebody doing, when you're doing something that is actually good and nobody's getting it,
right,
and you still stay on that track, and you're gonna fucking, the momentum that Dana Carvey had then, where there was talks of him taking over, I guess, Letterman's spot after he went over to CBS. Like, he was, they were trying to groom this guy like he was this company man. And he was just like, no, all right, I'll do a fucking sketch show. And just because it's on ABC and it's on at 9:30, I'm going to do exactly what I want to do. And it was just, and Smigel was, it blew me away. The whole thing was just incredible. I don't want to ruin it. Just check it out if you get a chance.
Smigel's brilliant.
Yeah, that definitely comes across. And you could see it really, it still hurt him. It seemed that he felt that he let Dana down. Is how we took it. And Dana's like, no, it's fine. You know, we did what we wanted to do.
It's impossible not to love Dana Carvey. It's actually impossible. And if you hang out with him, it's just, we won't talk for a while, but we've known each other since before we got a job. I auditioned for SNL. He auditioned. He got it. I didn't. I thought I'd never work again. I didn't. But we would go to dinner. We were like 24, 25. And we would go with our wives, and we would say, why aren't we making it? We both did music in our acts, and he did impressions, and I did my weird whatever the fuck I did. And we would say, we're both so talented. What the hell's going on? And we would commiserate. But he, what's beautiful about him is all the shit that he's gone through in his life. He's just a very positive person. He's, so we'll talk every once in a while for a couple hours, like a year or two will go by, and then it'll be a, okay, call me back. And it's like, this is what it's turned into for, you know, to catch up with your friends. It's a podcast, you know. You don't go, hey, let's have a drink and we'll FaceTime. That's not that often. But with Carvey, it's like a 3-hour phone call. And I it's always special. And he's just, I just love him. I love it. I love
like funny. He doesn't get the respect that he should get from like our kids know, like my kids will know certain guys from SNL, like, you know, the Will Ferrells and whatnot. But man, that guy was funny as fucking shit. Like he should have been down as one of the greats.
Well, he will. He will. It's not done. You know, he's about my age. A little younger, I think. I'm 64. How the fuck? Wait till you guys are 64 and your careers have taken off and you left your wives and all kinds of fun shit happens. It's going to be great. But, and then Bill will have his action movie with serious drama in it and not care about his kids anymore.
You're 64? You look fucking great.
Yeah, that's because I wear a vice. I wear a clamp on my dick. Like you would, I just, it holds in all my youth. You know what you would like jump start? Yeah, I'm going to continue. You know jumper cables, that thing? That's I always have that on my dick. So when you see me on stage, look, you'll see the indentation. And then a wire coming out of the bottom of my pants leg hooked up to a battery. You guys still on? but Rodney was 58 when he got in Caddyshack.
I love those stories.
Gene didn't have a movie.
Gene Hackman was like 54 before he got his first movie.
That's the real deal. And Brian Dennehy, who we just lost, he wasn't where he was be acting, but wasn't like the third lead in everything. Then 15 years, he was in everything. And I talked to somebody years ago that went, when he was at his peak, and somebody, God damn it, he's in everything. I went, well, he didn't get a part till he was in his 50s, you know, till things started to open for him. So,
yeah.
I also think as far as guys like Dana Carvey, because I just feel like guys that have his level of talent don't need to campaign nor give a shit about that pecking order stuff. I mean, everybody, you know, wants to be respected or whatever, but I also feel that like people that are good but sort of okay good just campaign for the shit. They're on the red carpet, they're tweeting, they're just really. And then they sort of become, when they talk about the whole pecking order, they move up all of these slots in like the draft. And then he's like this Tom Brady guy that goes drops down. I've always found that there's this weird thing that people that who are really at his level of talent don't give a shit about that playing that whole game. To be what? They're doing the top whatever list of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know? Do you want to do the interview for that? Like, they're really going to say, I feel like they just, nah, I don't give a shit about that. And then the fucking, you know, I don't want to say hacks, but the okay comics or whatever is sort of.
The people that learn how to work the stage and they walk around it and mark it like a lion because they've watched you do it, because they've watched, you know, Pryor, Carlin, everybody. Chappelle, Rock, you know, start moving. Don't just stand there. I mean, Chris Rock used to stand at the mic. When I used to bring him up on stage at the Comedy Store, the throttle wasn't open yet. You know, he was talking quieter and Eddie would bring him in. And
when are you writing the book? You're like the Forrest Gump. Like every fucking major comic of the last 40 years, you're like, that's because I introduced him to Mitzi. I met him.
No, but I was suffering. I didn't have a job. I was 8 years at the Comedy Store hosting.
This isn't about you. You're doing that again.
You're
this
incorrect, Bill. It is about me. But you were great as the lawyer in Black or White. You really were. And I don't think you're getting the credit. And you're good as Pete Davidson's dad.
They're actually a same-sex couple if you take the time to watch the movie.
Are you Siamese twins? That would be hot.
Yeah, that are into each other in an incestuous kind of way because we, you know, stuff happened to us.
But you've got to be connected.
And it's weird because we both were there when it happened, but we've still never talked about it.
And you're connected so that you're facing in different directions.
So, yeah, so the reveal is they see each other for the first time when they are separated and they're not attracted to each other.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be
I like how you presented that, Bert. Like, yes, I've seen this storyline 1,000 times.
Well, what's good about it, Bert, is you're giving Bill what he wants because there's the drama and the comedy.
My daughter just brought me a beer.
That's a good
raised tip. Right.
Raised right. Thank you, Isla.
Or that's the game of the family. Let's, you know, let's let dad get him drunk, have him pass out so then we can all fucking chill out and enjoy our day.
Oh, man.
All right. Those are the three exhales and the old man's. That means this podcast has reached its ending.
I don't know.
Bert's going on his third beer. All right. Well, that concludes the podcast. Bob, I want to tell you it's been so much fun to finally see the inside of your house, which used to be the nickname for your asshole, which you showed me when I first started comedy, when I hosted.
Well, and it used to be a full house.
Why you overpaid me.
Always will overpay you, Bill. Bill, you're not, you can't be overpaid now because you're such high rent. You get a big check, Bill. You sell out places in foreign lands.
Yep. And it goes right to the wife. Whatever doesn't go to the government goes to the wife.
Well, if the wife's going to get it, Nia deserves it. She's the best. I
get it. You had a fun time hanging out with her at your wedding.
No, but Kelly and I just love her. And we'd like to get together with you guys once all this insanity stops. It'd be really nice one day.
You know what? And I'll conveniently throw my back out. All right? And then you can just have a dinner with her because I know that's what you want.
If your back is out, I'm coming to your house. I just want it to be you and me because you're incapacitated and that's how I want you. And then Cruisin' comes back. That's the movie I'm remaking with you. You just play a test dummy in it.
Bob Saget, everybody.
Bert,
Robert.
Lots of love, podcast. Bert.
I'm going to be on an episode of it. It's called the Bob Saget. In your face, man. He ain't taking no shit because he's telling it like it is.
That's the name of it. It's called Bob Saget moving on up to the east side. No, it's Bob Saget's here for you. And I want you on it, Bert.
I'd love to. I'd love to, Bob. Thank you.
I'd love to. I want you drunk. I want your kid get you all liquored up.
Well, we're working on that today.
And Bill, you stopped smoking cigars? You're not smoking them no more?
I smoke one every couple of months.
Okay, well,
I can't give everything up, but when it's like a special occasion, I can do it.
How about when you throw your back out and I'm over your place? Can we smoke afterward?
Smoke out of Rodney's pipe.
Yeah, we'll smoke out of Rodney's pipe. Let's do that.
I think that's a yes. That's 100%. So I love you guys. You guys are so, I'm really honored and happy I was on with you guys today. It was a really nice way to spend my afternoon for real.
I don't think there was an ounce of sincerity in that. This has been.
You know what? Fuck you, Bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Bill
Podcast.
All right. Robert, I love you, brother. I'll see you.
Yeah, that was great, guys. Thank you.
I love you too. And Bert, $5,000's in the mail.
Thanks.